कृष्ण, हरे राम हरे राम, राम राम हरे हरे. सो दिस वर्स इज अबाउट हाउ कृष्ण इज फुल ऑफ कॉन्ट्रडिक्शंस. कृष्णस पास टाइम्स आर ऑफ्टन वेरी कॉन्ट्रडिक्टरी टू हिज ओन नेचर, बिकॉज वन ऑफ द नेम्स फॉर कृष्ण इज अजा, विच लिटरली मीन्स विदाउट बर्थ, ही इज अनबोर्न. But then we see here that we're celebrating Janmashtami. So Janma means birth, and Janmashtami is a celebration of Krishna's birth. So how is it that the person who is unborn, who doesn't take birth, appears to be taking birth? And then we also know that Krishna is the original person. He's the supreme original personality of Godhead. So if he's the original person, then no one comes before him. So how is it that he has a father and a mother? That's a contradiction. And then also Krishna is called Mukunda, or the giver of liberation. So if Krishna is the giver of liberation, then his devotees, pure devotees, are liberated. And what to speak of himself, he's always in the liberated position. But he was born in prison, and his mother and father were locked up in prison. So this is a contradiction. And then Krishna is the Lord of Lord Narayan. He's the source of Vishnu, and Vishnu is the Lord of Vaikuntha, and Vaikuntha is the place of no anxiety. So Krishna is the Lord of the place of no anxiety, but his parents are in total anxiety that Kamsa is going to kill him, that Kamsa is sending so many demons to Vrindavan to try to kill him, and that he's going to be in trouble or in danger, that he's going to be hurt and killed. And then, although Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, he's completely transcendental, and his transcendental abode is in the spiritual world in Goloka. But he comes to this world and he acts just like an ordinary human being. It's contradictory. And then another thing that's interesting that I'll talk about today, especially, is that although Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, but he seems to be faced with so many difficulties. So in this class, we're going to take a deeper look at some of these apparent contradictions and hopefully get a better understanding of the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and his activities in this world. And it's important for us to contemplate these things, because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says himself that by knowing the transcendental nature of his appearance and activities, his janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattvatah tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam iti surajuna. By understanding how Krishna's appearance in this world and his activities in this world are completely transcendental, if we can just understand that, then upon leaving our bodies, we don't have to take birth again in the material world, but we can go back to Godhead. So that's pretty amazing. It just shows how it's not so easy to understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and activities. But we're lucky because Krishna does explain these things himself. Right in the Bhagavad Gita, he addresses this issue, that how is it that Krishna is unborn but still takes his birth? So first of all, he hints at it in Bhagavad Gita 4:5, where he says that to Arjuna, because Arjuna is asking him, well, how is it that you spoke this knowledge to the sun god when you're, the same age as me, and the sun god lived, many millennium ago? So Krishna says, "Oh Arjuna, many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember them all, but you cannot." So that already hints that Krishna's birth in this world, although he appears again and again, and he appears with his eternal associates again and again, but his birth is different from everyone else's birth. And now, then in the next verse in Bhagavad Gita 4:6, he goes on to explain why. And now he addresses this issue head on, because he starts off saying, Ajopi san avyayatma. So Ajo is right there, the word Aja, unborn. So he's saying, Ajopi san avyayatma. Although I'm Aja, although I'm unborn, and avyaya, that my transcendental body never is sub it's never subject to change or any kind of deterioration. And bhutanam ishvaropi san, although I'm the Ishvara, the supreme Lord, supreme controller of Bhutanam, all living beings, and Prakritim Swam Adishtaya, that still I situate myself, Swam Adishtaya, within Prakritim, within this material nature. But even though I do that, Sambhavam Yaatma Mayaya, that this appearance, this my coming to this world, Sambhavami, is not, I'm not forced to come to this world and take birth by material nature, but I come Atma Mayaya, by my own internal potency. So Krishna appears in his original transcendental form by his own internal potency, by his own sweet will. This is a big difference between Krishna's birth in this world and ours, because every time we are born, we get a new body and we forget our previous body. So we're the same soul, but each time in a new body. But Krishna never gets a new body. Whenever he appears in his same body, his original, eternal, transcendental body. And when he leaves the world, he also goes with that same transcendental form. So his body is not material. It's not different from his soul. Our body is different from our soul, and we're not the body. But Krishna's body and his soul are the same, and Krishna actually is his body. And he's eternally, that's his eternal transcendental form. And also the way that although Krishna appears from, as the child of a mother and father, but he's not conceived or born like an ordinary baby. But Srimad Bhagavatam describes how actually Krishna, first he appears in the pure heart of Vasudev, and then by his sweet will, and to fulfill the spiritual desire of his parents, who intensely desired and performed austerities for many lifetimes to have Krishna as their son, he transfers himself from the heart of Vasudev, or from the mind of Vasudev, to the womb of Devaki. And then even Krishna's parents are not ordinary, that they're also part of Krishna's transcendental road show, his entourage. So whenever Krishna appears in this world, they also come with him to be his parents. And they also have eternal, they also have Satchit Ananda spiritual forms too. And that's said in the Bhagavatam about Devaki specifically. The Sanskrit phrase is there, Devakyam, Devarupinyam. Means that Devaki, she has a deva rupa, she has a divine, a spiritual form. So then, Krishna is eternally transcendental, his parents are eternally transcendental. So, how is it that Krishna and his eternally transcendental parents end up in jail? If Krishna is a supreme controller, then why do they have to suffer this fate? And not just that they're in jail, but like all the babies that were born previously to Krishna, they were all cruelly killed by Kamsa. And it's like the worst thing that can happen to parents is that their baby can die. And what to speak of being murdered right in front of their eyes in such a terrible, horrific way that Kamsa did it. So, why did that happen? Why did Krishna's parents have to undergo that trauma? Is it because Krishna hadn't appeared yet, so he couldn't do anything? Or, why even after his birth, why did they have to suffer? Was it because he was just a newborn baby and he had to grow up a little bit first? And Krishna wasn't powerful enough to intervene and save the situation? What do you think?
Right, so it's a pastime.
It's a pastime. Okay, is that all? Krishna enjoys making his devotees suffer for his pastimes. Is that fun for him?
So they could pray more sincerely and remember him, like Vatsala's doing.
What's that?
Vatsala said, so they could pray more sincerely, like she's doing right now.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I mean it's kind of like that why would Krishna put his parents in exile? The answer is that he wanted to increase their love for him. So yeah, like that he wanted them to take shelter of him and pray to him and call out to him. And why? Because all of these things increase a devotee's loving attachment to Krishna. And this is actually Krishna's main motivation for everything that he does, is to intensify the loving exchanges between himself and his devotees. So, I mean, most of you have probably had experience that when you go through difficulties with others and you kind of pull together as a team and you get through those hard times together, then the bonds that you form with those people that you went through difficulties with are very strong. They're like very strong bonds. Those are people that you really, you depended on, you counted on, they were there for you, they supported you. So Krishna also, he creates these intense situations in order to maximize our absorption, to maximize our transcendental emotions, so that those bonds will form, so that we form firm bonds with Krishna and with Krishna's devotees. So even though it looks like they're in difficulty, it looks like Vasudeva and Devaki are in difficulty, it even looks like Krishna's in difficulty, but they're not really in difficulty because they're all totally transcendental. Actually, Vasudeva and Devaki were experiencing the highest bliss due to their concentrated Krishna consciousness. And then another thing that's shown here is that for Krishna and for devotees of Krishna, there are actually no obstacles. The obstacles are only incidental. So they may look like obstacles, but actually they're aids. They assist us in making spiritual advancement. And, like Vasila said, they give a reason to take shelter of Krishna. They give us an impetus to actually up our game in devotional service. And they give Krishna an opportunity to glorify his devotees, that how his devotees were so amazing that they rose to the occasion. They boldly confronted the issue. They fearlessly, went forth and did the needful. Like that. So, this is what we see here in Kamsa's prison house, that Vasudeva and Devaki were chained to the floor with iron shackles. They were locked up behind this heavy iron gate, guarded by armed guards. But then Krishna was born, and he first appeared as not as a little baby, but he was actually born with a four-armed Vishnu form. As a grown, in his adult Vishnu form, because Vishnu is never a baby, with his club and with conch disc, club and lotus flower, wearing a crown, like helmet and earrings and all that, so that Vasudeva and Devi could understand that this was actually the child. This was the one that was coming to kill Kamsa. This was the one that was coming to, save the earth from all the demons that were terrorizing it. So then, in that Vishnu form, Krishna instructed Vasudeva to take him to Gokul. And then Krishna resumed his then he took he showed his baby form, and Devaki was holding him as a baby in her arms, and they were, looking at him lovingly. But then Vasudeva had this instruction. So as soon as he accepted the instruction to take Krishna out of the jail, across the Yamuna, and to Gokul, as soon as he had the intention to do that, then his shackles fell open and the prison gates mystically unlocked, and the guards fell into a deep sleep so that Vasudeva could safely get Krishna out of there. So it just shows that it looks like there are obstacles. It looks like there are so many impediments to us doing a service, following the order of our spiritual masters, which is indirectly the order of the Lord. But as soon as we attempt to do it, as soon as we set our intention that yes, it looks difficult, it may look impossible, but I'm going to do it, then all the obstacles just kind of disappear. Just like the shackles just fell open. And also, like that was just the beginning of it. When they got outside, when Vasudev got outside with Krishna, there was a terrible storm. It was like hammering down rain. But then Krishna's incarnation of Ananta Shesh came and, you know, he put his snake hoods, his thousands of hoods over their head like an umbrella. Then they got to the Yamuna, and due to the heavy rain, it was so deep and it was so fast that there was no way that they were going to be able to cross it. It was over his head. He had his newborn baby in a basket. What was he going to do? But as soon as they got there, then the waters parted, just like Moses and what was it, the Red Sea, just parted, and then they could walk across. And even though it was the middle of the night, because Krishna appeared at midnight, and because it was raining, it was cloudy, it was a deep, dark, moonless night. But Krishna's own effulgence lit the whole way, all the way to Gokul on the other side of the Yamuna, to the place of Nandamaraj and Mother Yashoda, to the maternity room where Mother Yashoda had just given birth. And actually, at the exact time that Krishna was born to Devaki, he also was born to Yashoda. So Yashoda gave birth to a son, and then afterwards she gave birth to a daughter. She had twins, fraternal twins. And so when Vasudev went into the maternity room of Yashoda, Yashoda was sleeping, and there was a boy. The boy child was on one side of Yashoda, and the girl child was on the other. But because Vasudev had the instruction to, you know, go there and get the girl and leave Krishna and take the girl child instead, then he was just like, you know, he wasn't messing around. He wasn't, you know, looking around. He just saw the girl child, picked her up, put Krishna down, and left. So, but actually, with that boy child was Krishna, Nandanandana Krishna. And the Krishna that was born of Vasudeva and Devaki, that was Vasudeva Krishna. So when Vasudeva put Vasudeva, his son, down with Yashoda, then the two Krishnas merged together and became one Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna. Then, of course, later when Akrura comes to Vrindavan and he takes away Krishna to Mathura for Kamsa's wrestling match, then the Krishna that goes is actually just Vasudeva Krishna. That Vasudeva Krishna who had merged with Nandanandana Krishna, then he separates and he goes to Mathura. And then Nandanandana Krishna, Yashoda Nandana Krishna, he stays in Vrindavan but in an unmanifested form. So that's why it's said that Krishna actually never leaves Vrindavan. He doesn't take one step out of Vrindavan because we're talking about the original form of Krishna. This is Nandanandana Krishna. So Vasudev left Krishna there and then he went back. And then, as soon as he got back, the gates closed, the shackles locked, the guards woke up, and no one knew what had happened. So, even though it seemed like there were all these obstacles, but it couldn't have been more perfect. And so this shows that we also don't have to fear difficulties. We can have total faith that if we just align ourselves with the mission of Krishna, then everything's going to be perfect, no matter how bad it may seem at any given moment. So some of you there, you had some difficulties this morning. It may have been looking bad at a few moments, and those moments may still come later on in the day and in the coming weeks. And throughout our lives, actually, those moments are going to come. Difficulties will come. In the Shastra, it says that we should expect difficulties. And actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that that for one who has actually received the mercy of the Lord, then his path will be strewn with thorns. It's not going to be covered with rose petals. It's going to be strewn with thorns. So we can expect difficulties. And from the start of his life, Krishna had difficulties. His parents had difficulties, and the difficulties continued throughout his earthly pastimes. But at the same time, It's not, they don't experience it as difficulties. They actually experience it as transcendental bliss. So, yeah, we also see this with Srila Prabhupada that in his mission and coming to America, he had so many difficulties. You know, why didn't Krishna just make it easy for him? You know, why did he have to come on a cargo ship? Why did he have to have two heart attacks? And then when he got here, why did he have to get his apartment broken into and his typewriter stolen, his life threatened? Why did he have to live on the Bowery? Why couldn't he live in a nice place? You know, he lived in this slum, this ghetto with drunks lying on his doorstep and sometimes dying on his doorstep. And, you know, Prabhupada had given up everything and totally dedicated himself to serving Krishna through the direct order of his spiritual master. Why didn't Krishna make it easy for him? The answer is that Krishna wanted to show that despite the obstacles, a devotee never gives up. Krishna's devotees never give up. They never lose faith. And they'll never even compromise their principles. At the same time, they'll never actually suffer, but they'll always feel sheltered. They'll always feel like that protection is there, support is there. And at the end of the day, they'll always be victorious. Like Krishna says at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, that wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, then there will certainly be four things: opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. That is Krishna's opinion. So Krishna's opinion is more than an opinion, it's the fact. So he's saying that whoever is Krishna conscious, they're going to be victorious. It's going to work out. It's going to be wonderful in the end. So Krishna, yeah, he wants to glorify his devotees and to show us and to show the world that if we just surrender to Krishna's will and embrace these difficulties in Krishna's service and totally depend on Krishna for the outcome, then miracles are going to happen. But we have to do our part. Just like Vasudev, if Vasudev hadn't, if he had said, "Oh, Krishna, you know, it's the middle of the night, it's raining, why don't we wait till the morning?" You know, if he had said like that, then, you know, nothing would have happened. Or if he had said, "Oh, it's too dangerous, you know, the guards are going to wake up. Anyways, how are we going to get out of here?" If he had had all these doubts, if he had all these fears about following the instruction of Krishna, then the miracles wouldn't have happened. You know, if he hadn't approached the Yamuna on that dark, stormy night, would it have parted? If he hadn't agreed to follow Krishna's order, would the shackles have opened? Would Anantashesh had come? In the same way, if Srila Prabhupada had traveled to the USA in, you know, an airplane in a nice, comfortable 747 or whatever, would the Atlantic have calmed? Would those Das avatars have appeared to him in a dream and spoken to him and shown them how they had taken charge of the ship? Probably not. So sometimes Krishna creates these challenging situations for his devotees just so he can manifest himself in miraculous ways. And Krishna comes to us when we voluntarily accept difficulties in his service. In fact, there's a verse in the Bhagavatam. It's in Canto 8. I can't remember the exact reference, but Lord Shiva says that to voluntarily accept austerity for the sake of mitigating the suffering of others is the highest method of worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this thing of voluntarily accepting difficulties is actually the highest worship. This is the highest worship that we can do. So we shouldn't shun away from difficulties. We should think, yes, embrace the difficulty. This is the highest service. This is the way to worship the Lord. And great devotees know that. They know that secret. Like Kunti Devi, you know, she prayed, "Let these calamities come again and again." Why did she want calamities? Because she said, because then we can see you again and again. Because whenever There's difficulty, but we go on serving despite the difficulty. Then Krishna helps. Krishna actually comes to the rescue in different ways. And she, and Kun, you know, for Kunti and the Pandavas, Krishna literally came. He literally came there to be personally with them. And she says that, and by seeing you, that means that we will no longer have to see repeated birth and death. So when we rise to the occasion, you know, when the going gets tough, when we get tough and get going, then, you know, in other words, it means when we become more focused in our service, more determined, we get more intense in our sadhana, more deep in our prayers, more feelingly offering prayers, with the confidence that Krishna is going to help, that Krishna is going to come to the rescue. And with Krishna, everything is possible. I may not be able to solve this problem, but for Krishna, no problem. Krishna, he can deal with that very easily. So then we need to, what's the saying? Work as if everything depends on us, but pray as if everything depends on Krishna. So we have to really try our best, like Vasudev had to make the effort, and then wait for the miracles to start happening in our lives. So every devotee has experienced this or will experience this Krishna magic. We'll experience Krishna's magic depending on our surrender. So then, yeah, we can look at another contradiction that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then, why does he appear as an ordinary human being? Because most people, if they have some exalted position, then they want to flaunt it. You know, if they have wealth, if they have power, they want to use it to establish their superiority. But even though Krishna is in the supreme position, he's the possessor of all wealth, he's Bhagavan, he's the possessor of all the opulences, he's, you know, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, he's the lord of all planets and demigods, but still he's so humble. And in fact, he actually goes out of his way to hide the fact that he's God. He uses his own spiritual potencies to conceal his spiritual potencies so that the Brajavasis will think that he's an ordinary child, so that his parents will, you know, take care of him as if he's their helpless baby, and so that his friends will play with him as if he's just an ordinary boy. They'll wrestle with him, they'll tease him, they'll steal his lunch bag just like they steal anybody else's. And so the older gopis will chastise him for stealing butter and, you know, yell at him and chase him out of their houses. So why does Krishna do this? Because Krishna appreciates real relationships with real people. Not that this person worships me because I'm wealthy or because I'm powerful, and they're thinking that because I'm wealthy, then I can bless them with wealth, or because I'm powerful, then I can give them powers and I can solve their problems, and I can, because I'm liberated and transcendental, I can liberate them from the cycle of birth and death. Course, these things are okay. You know, it's better to approach Krishna for these things than to totally deny his existence or to, you know, hate him or whatever, to be an atheist. But still, these types of worshipers are not so interesting to Krishna because they all just want something from him. And it's a sad fact, you know, that even amongst religious people in this world, most people are not interested in having a loving relationship with God. They just go and ask him for things. And they think that because he's God and because he can do anything and because he has everything, that he is obligated, you know, to give them whatever they ask for, just because they asked, or just because they gave a little donation, like, you know, like, I'll give you $10, you cure my disease. That's so I remember that when I was a teenager, my family used to go to church every Sunday, and there was one family there that had a daughter who had cancer. So, you know, every week they would come, and every week The whole church would pray for them to, cure her cancer. But then ultimately the girl died. And that family, we got the news that she had passed away, but we never saw the family again. They never came back to church. And I asked the pastor about this, like, what happened to that family? And he said, oh, they lost their faith because we were all praying and still the daughter passed away. So they lost their faith. And then when he said that, that had such a strong impact on me, because they seemed so religious, but their mood was that we come with our demands, and if you don't supply what we want, then it's over. It's just so transactional that I ask you for this, you don't give it to me, then bye. Just whatever. So Srimad Bhagavatam calls this cheating religion, approaching the Lord with material motivations, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, that whole path, that dharma, I do some religion. Why? For artha, so I can get economic development. And why do I want that? Because karma. Then I can fulfill all my material desires. And then, yeah, at the end, we'll think about moksha. After I've enjoyed myself sufficiently, then because I have this relationship with God, then hopefully he'll give me moksha. That's their idea. But Srimad Bhagavatam says this is cheating religion. Why? Because when we approach the Lord with material desires, and when we think of Krishna as our order supplier, then that actually blocks a loving relationship, because how can we have a loving relationship with somebody who doesn't want to love us, who just wants to use us? Therefore, Krishna says that the highest mode of worship is that exhibited by the Brajavasis, and specifically the gopis of Vrindavan, because they don't want anything from him. They just want to be with him, and they want to do things to make him happy because they love him, and that's all. And Krishna loves that. He loves when they do that, and he loves when we do that, because Krishna also, he just wants to be with his devotees. He just wants to be with us, and he wants to do things to make us happy because he loves us. But if we have another mood, if we don't want to be with Krishna, if we don't want to have a loving exchange with Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates with our mood. So that's just something to meditate on, is about the mood that we have towards Krishna, and comparing the moods of the, like these people who see Krishna as their order supplier with the mood of the Brajavasis. And so, yeah, and so that's why Krishna comes as an ordinary human being, because he wants to bring out that love. He doesn't want the love to be eclipsed by conceptions of awe and reverence. So it's just very sweet that Krishna, he discards his whole position, his position as being the Supreme Lord and the possessor of everything and the source of all spiritual material worlds, the creator, the maintainer, the destroyer. He just throws all that away, like it's totally insignificant, because he wants everyone to just love him for who he is, love him for his amazing personal qualities and his pastimes, and not for so. I wanted to bring up another point too, because I was talking about how the Brajavasis, they just want to be with Krishna, and Krishna just wants to be with them. So how to be with Krishna? And it could be argued that Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, and Vasudeva and Devaki, they could be with Krishna for some time. The Brajavasis, they could be with Krishna for some time. The queens and the residents of Dwarka, they could be with Krishna for some time. But how about us? Krishna appeared. He lived for 125 years on this earth, and then he disappeared. And that was long ago, and Krishna may seem very far away. But actually, Srila Prabhupada writes something very interesting. in the 10th canto. He says that, well, the whole reason that Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago is because the planet was overburdened with demons. It wasn't just Kamsa. There were thousands. There were millions of demons who had come from other planets, from higher planets. And by their superior powers, they had managed to take birth in these royal families. So they would be born as kings. And that way they took over the governments and they were committing all these atrocities. So we know from Krishna book that in that situation, Mother Earth, who couldn't bear the weight of all of these horrendous demons and all their sinful activities, was aggrieved. And she approached Lord. She took the form of a cow to get sympathy of Lord Vishnu, because she knows that the Lord and the demigods are very favorable towards cows. So she took the form of a cow to get the sympathy of the Lord. And she went to Lord Vishnu. Well, first she went to Brahma, and then Brahma, along with all the demigods, went to Vishnu, and then on the ocean of milk. And then Vishnu said, okay, I'm coming. I'm going to come. So Prabhupada says that this same situation, similar situation with the earth being overburdened with demons, is practically happening now. So he writes, this is from 10th Canto, Chapter 1, Text 17, purport. He says, long, long ago, asuras, persons devoid of Krishna consciousness, became heads of state. And now this is happening again. The various states of the world are preoccupied with arranging for military strength. Because of the present world situation, now listen carefully, as Srila Prabhupada says. Because of the present world situation, Krishna has descended in the form of the Krishna consciousness movement. This is quite natural, for without the Krishna consciousness movement, the world cannot be peaceful and happy. So when I read this, I thought this was so amazing, you know, that Krishna has descended in the form of the Krishna consciousness movement. And we can see that all the purposes of Krishna for appearing in this world 5,000 years ago are actually being fulfilled in like right here and now by the Krishna consciousness movement. Because why does Krishna, what are his purposes for coming to this world? He tells us in Bhagavad Gita that he comes to annihilate the miscreants. So Krishna consciousness movement is annihilating the miscreants by, purifying us of the demoniac mentality. And then how is it delivering? And then the second, Krishna comes to annihilate the miscreants to deliver the pious. So Krishna consciousness movement is delivering the pious by giving shelter to the devotees, by creating an international society with temples and communities and bhakti academies where people can come, pious people can come and get association and inspiration and be delivered from, you know, the miseries of material world. And then he also comes to reestablish the principles of religion. So the Krishna consciousness movement is reestablishing the principles of religion by Srila Prabhupada's books, by his purports, which really make it very clear, you know, the essence of all the scriptures, and showing the world how to practice the principles of religion by following four regulative principles, by following the 64 items of bhakti, by, you know, all the things that we do in our daily lives. The Krishna conscious lifestyle is establishing the principles of religion in philosophy and in practice. And also in Srimad Bhagavatam, a couple more reasons for Krishna's appearance are given. One is to reveal his transcendental form, names, and qualities. Krishna comes so people can know what he looks like, so people can know his names, right? Like he has all these names. Because he appeared, he's known as Devaki Nandana, or Yashoda Nandana, or Govinda, or Giridhari, because of the pastimes that he did there, or Shama Sundar. So because he appeared and he was known by names in this world, then we know all these names of him. Because he showed his form, we know what he looks like. Because he exhibited his pastimes and he showed his qualities, then we know a little bit about what Krishna is like, what his personality is like. And so through the Krishna consciousness movement, all these things are being broadcast. The name, right, when we go on Harinam, the form of Krishna, we have the deities and so many pictures, the qualities of Krishna, that we hear, we speak from Bhagavatam and hear about Krishna's transcendental qualities. So that's all being done by the Krishna consciousness movement. And then another purpose of Krishna's coming to this world is to enjoy transcendental pastimes of love with his pure devotees. And that's also being done here in ISKCON, that there are so many pastimes of love between pure devotees. All the six loving exchanges between devotees are taking place, and enhancing the loving dealings between devotees. And by that, we're also developing our loving relationship with Krishna. We're enjoying transcendental pastimes of love with the devotees and with Krishna by the service that we do with devotees for Krishna and Krishna's reciprocation with our loving service. So, in all these ways, we can see that Krishna has actually taken birth within the Krishna consciousness movement, and he's fulfilling all the objectives of his birth, of his appearance in this world, through the Krishna consciousness movement. And furthermore, there's another purport in the Bhagavatam where Srila Prabhupada says that, so this was, Prabhupada wrote this while he was still in India or just leaving India. He says, that just like Vasudeva and Devaki were locked in the prison, and Krishna was in the womb of Devaki, but nobody knew because he was in prison. So similarly, he said that Krishna consciousness was locked in India, and the rest of the world didn't have a clue about Krishna or the process of bhakti or the goal of Goloka Vrindavan. But then, Krishna was born, like we just heard. And Vasudeva immediately took him out of the prison, and he went to Gokul, and he did his pastimes all over, and he exhibited his wonderful, all attractive pastimes and qualities and form for the world to see. So, in the same way, Srila Prabhupada took Krishna consciousness out of India and spread it all over the world. So, in these ways, we can see that Krishna has really descended in the form of the Krishna consciousness movement. So we are talking about how to be with Krishna. How can we be with Krishna? And this is how we can be with Krishna. That Krishna, in his most recent incarnation, is the Krishna consciousness movement. Krishna himself appeared 5,000 years ago, and Lord Chaitanya appeared 500 years ago. But the Krishna consciousness movement, as started by Srila Prabhupada, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, appeared just 50 years ago. And they all appeared for the same purposes. They're all offering the same transcendental gifts. So we may not be able to see or serve Krishna like Mother Yashoda did. We may not be able to see and serve Krishna like to serve Lord Chaitanya like his servants did. His personal associates did. But we can directly serve Srila Prabhupada's movement. We can directly take part in Srila Prabhupada's mission. And if we do this with the mood of the Brajavasis, without asking anything for ourselves, not trying to use Krishna or use ISKCON or use the Bhakti Academy as our order supplier, but following in that mood of the Brajavasis of just wanting to be with Krishna. For example, like when we chant japa, we're not chanting to get anything. We're not chanting even for our own purification. We're just setting aside the time to be with Krishna, just to do something to please Krishna, according to the indications of Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, of how to please Krishna. And so, if we do everything in that mood, that I just want to be with Krishna through this service and be in Krishna consciousness and do this service just to please Him. Out of love, then we're going to feel Krishna's presence in this movement. And we will develop a loving relationship with Krishna through this movement. I can guarantee it. You just need to keep going. And you're going to feel Krishna's love by serving Srila Prabhupada's movement. And yes, there will be difficulties, just like Vasudeva and Devaki experienced. Like the Pandavas and Kunti experienced, like even the gopis experienced, like even Radharani had her difficulties. So, but Krishna arranged this. Why does Radharani have to be married to someone else? Why does she have to have this overbearing mother-in-law, Jatila, and an over and a you know a gossipy, snooty sister-in-law, Kutila, who do everything they can to stop her meeting Krishna? Because Radharani is Krishna's eternal consort. Why couldn't they just be together forever? Why does Krishna have to leave Vrindavan for such a long time? Why couldn't it just be easy? Because if it was easy, it would be kind of boring, wouldn't it? It would be dry. It would be just sort of flat. Even, we experienced that. What's more fun? Sitting on a raft on a nice, calm, peaceful lake, or whitewater rafting down a fast, furious river? What's more enjoyable? Walking on a sidewalk in suburban America, or trekking on a steep mountain in the Himalayas? So the lake or the sidewalk are definitely easier. They're safer. They're going to be more peaceful. But who cares about that? Who's interested in doing that? On the other hand, people will pay so much money to go whitewater rafting, to go trek in the Himalayas, although it's difficult, it's dangerous, it's scary, you could die. But why? Because it's exhilarating. So in the same way, Krishna, he makes our lives in Krishna consciousness exhilarating. Krishna consciousness is never boring. One time, His Holiness Badri Narayan Swami was talking, and he was telling us that one time his father asked him, he said, "Son, you don't watch TV, you don't go out to restaurants or clubs or theme parks or movies, you don't play sports, you don't even have a family. What do you do? Don't you get bored?" And Maharaj laughed, and he said, "Dad, in my 50 plus years of Krishna consciousness, I've experienced the whole range of human emotions. I've been elated, I've been frustrated, I've been confused, amused, exhausted, I've been inspired, I've been disgusted, I've been ecstatic, but one thing I've never experienced is boredom." So, like that. And Krishna, Srila Prabhupada actually instructed his leaders in that way, that the way to maintain the enthusiasm of the devotees is to keep giving them fresh new challenges. Because the challenges make it fun, they make it exhilarating. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and he knows how to have fun. Who knows how to have more fun than the supreme enjoyer himself? So, Krishna's pastimes are full of drama and emotion and tension and celebration. And our lives in Krishna consciousness are the same. So if we just stick with Krishna, then we can expect that, yeah, it's not always going to be easy and it's not going to be predictable. Like Bhishma Dev said at the beginning in the purport, no one knows the plan of the Lord. We have no idea what's going to happen. You probably all woke up this morning thinking, yay, Janmashtami, it's going to be ecstasy, bliss. We're going to chant nice japa and it's going to be so peaceful and wonderful. No one knows the plan of the Lord. You never know what twists and turns Krishna's going to throw into the day. But when these challenges come, we just have to embrace them because that's when Krishna comes. Krishna comes under those circumstances. He appears when it's difficult, he appears when it's intense, and he comes to do his magic. And the obstacles are not obstacles, they're aids to increasing our dependence on Krishna, to churning our hearts so that all those anarthas can be purged out, so that our dormant love for Krishna, that love which is inherent in the hearts of everyone, can be awakened. But it's bewildering, to ordinary people, it's bewildering to our mundane perception. So we have to learn to view these things not through mundane perception. We have to get off the mundane perception platform. Otherwise, it just looks like so many contradictions. And Krishna's unborn, but he takes birth. He's the supreme controller, but his pastimes are wrought with difficulties. Ordinary people are bewildered by these things, but devotees understand that Krishna's pastimes are sometimes a little crooked because that's the nature of love. Love is not a straightforward thing. Love goes every which way. And actually the crookedness, these things enhance the love. And by serving Krishna, by serving the Krishna consciousness movement, we can enter into Krishna's pastimes right here and now and experience a loving relationship with Krishna that is dynamic and that is exhilarating. So I'll stop here. There any questions or comments? Please go ahead.
What are the moksha
Someone's asking, what does moksha mean?
What does moksha mean? Moksha means liberation. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Yeah, so this, I was talking about the cheating religion is that you do some pious activities, some religious activities. Usually it refers to like karmakanda rituals that are materially motivated. So you're doing those to get wealth, to get some material gain, and then you use that for your sense gratification. And then the promise is that at the end of that, you'll get moksha, you'll get liberation from this world. But the problem is that that's not necessarily what happens because, when people get wealth and they use it for sense gratification, then the tendency is for them to not be uplifted spiritually by those kinds of activities, but to be degraded by sense gratification. And so they just keep going around and around doing material activities for sense gratification, enjoying the senses, doing more activities for sense gratification, enjoying the senses. And they don't actually get liberation. That's why it's called cheating religion, because it promises you liberation, but it doesn't necessarily give it to you. You get cheated. So then Krishna's saying, the way to, in Bhagavatam is saying, the way to avoid being cheated is to not approach the Lord with material motivations. Don't have sense gratification as a goal. Just forget about that. Because anyways, in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, yehi samsparsha bhoga dukkha yonaya evate. He says the intelligent people do not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. The sense gratification is not a source of happiness. It's a source of misery, and it actually blocks our access to real happiness because, like I was saying, it blocks us from having an eternal loving relationship with Krishna on the transcendental platform. So that's why he says that the worship of the Brajavasis is the highest. It's the best because there's no material motivation. They just love Krishna. They just want to be with Krishna because they love him. And out of their love, they're inspired. They just want to serve him because they want to make him happy because they love him. It's all based on love. It's like that's the real thing. That's the religion that's not going to cheat you. That's the approach that Krishna actually responds to the most. So when we. So we don't need to worry about moksha, liberation in that case. See, the other way, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, they approach the Lord thinking they'll get moksha and they don't even get it. They get cheated. It's inaccessible to them. But for devotees, if we approach Krishna without any material motivation, moksha is like a byproduct. Moksha is, like it said, moksha personified is standing at the doorstep of a devotee with folded hands saying, how can I serve you? Devotees don't even care about moksha. Devotees just want to serve Krishna in any condition. Swarga apavarga narvakesha tulya, what is it? Tulya some
Tulyartha
api
Darshan.
tulya tadarshan. Yeah, that they see heaven, hell, and liberation all as the same thing. Why? Because in any case, Narayana Parayana, They're just taking shelter of Narayan, and that shelter, even in hell, gives them the highest bliss. Even in heaven, gives them the highest bliss. And liberation, yeah, they'll also be blissful because they'll also be serving Krishna. It doesn't matter. In heaven, hell, or in the liberated state, they're going to be serving Krishna. And the bliss comes not from where they are. It doesn't come from their material external situation. It comes from serving Krishna. Therefore, nothing external matters.
I have a related question, Prabhu.
Yeah.
We were discussing yesterday about should we go back, should we desire to go back to Godhead? Or should we just desire to serve Krishna here in the material world? And if we are, there's also the statement that devotees are beyond liberation that I've heard, but I couldn't explain it fully. Could you explain those two?
Devotees are beyond liberation.
So there's the question of, should we desire to go back to Godhead? And then how are devotees beyond liberation?
Okay. How are devotees are beyond liberation is, I'll just start that with that first because it's a better starting point. is that liberation means you're free from material suffering. Basically, you're free from material bondage. You're free from the cycle of birth and death. That's what liberation means. And then there are five kinds of liberation. You know, there's Sarupya, Sayujya, Samipya, Salokya, and Sarshti. That you either become one with the Lord, or you get the same form of the Lord, the same planet of the Lord, the same opulences of the Lord, or the association of the Lord. So those are the five kinds of liberation. But yeah, liberation means you're free from, you're basically free. Right? It's like a person's in jail and they get released from jail, they're liberated, they're free. But then the perfection of life is not just to get out of jail, it's to actually have a life, right? It's to actually do things in the world. It's to actually have a happy life in the free state by doing things, by having loving relationships and activities and things in your life. So liberation just means that you're no longer bound to the cycle of repeated birth and death. But then, okay, fine. So I'm free from material activities and I'm free from karma and all that. But now what? Now what am I going to do? Then bhakti begins. So bhakti is what you do post-liberation. It's the post-liberated state. Actually, real bhakti begins from the point of liberation. While we still are materially entangled, we're practicing. You know, this is sadhana. We're devotional service in practice. We're just practicing to try to, you know, so that when we get to the liberated state, then we can actually, like, you know, then our bhakti is going to really take off. So, but bhakti is what we do in the liberated state. So devotional service is beyond liberation because it's like it leads you to liberation, but it actually manifests after liberation. Okay, so then the question is, should we desire to go back to Godhead? Yeah, this question always comes up. Well, one thing is that Srila Prabhupada, he does give that to us as a goal, right? He says that we should aspire to go back to Godhead, that the goal of a devotee's life is to get out of this material world and go back home, back to Godhead. So yeah, we want to go back to Godhead, but not for our own enjoyment, but because Krishna wants us to come home. You know, it's like a parent has a child that runs away from home and they're in danger and they're suffering, they're out on the street and the parents are worried about them. They just want the child to come home and be safe and be sheltered and be happy and to be able to have a relationship with that child again because they're missing them. They haven't seen them for so many years. So like that, Krishna wants us to come home and for us to be reestablished in our eternal constitutional positions, in our relationship with him, and to engage with him in that relationship. Krishna actually wants that. And he wants it because he enjoys that. And he also wants it because he wants us to be happy. And he knows that we are not going to be happy here. At the same time, like I was saying, that a devotee is happy in any situation of service. So, you know, like whenever we have a prayer to Krishna, we always say, if you so desire, right? So in the same thing, we can desire to go back to Godhead if Krishna so desires. And be like, Krishna, please, I want to go back to Godhead. Please take me home if you so desire. But if you desire for me to stay in this material world because you have your mission here, Lord Chaitanya's mission to, you know, reclaim all the fallen conditioned souls and spread Krishna consciousness, and for this Krishna consciousness movement to expand, to create a golden age of Krishna consciousness that's going to sweep the world and, you know, liberate everyone. If you want me to stay here and be a part of that, to making that happen, that's also your pastime. If you want me to be in that pastime, if that's your desire, then I'll accept that too. And that's actually none different than going back to Godhead, because it's, you're still with Krishna, right? Like that's what I was saying in the class, that Krishna has descended in the form of this Krishna consciousness movement, and we can feel Krishna's presence. We can be with Krishna, which is, to be with Krishna means to be in the spiritual world. So we can be home. We can be back to Godhead by being fully, purely devoted to serving Srila Prabhupada's preaching mission. And a very advanced devotee experiences that. So then it's non-different, you know, it's just non-different. On our current stage of realization, we can't experience that, because we're still, what we're feeling is the threefold miseries of material life. You know, we're still not yet liberated. But a liberated soul, for them, it's the same. Okay, anything else? You'll have to repeat, because I didn't hear a thing. I just heard the
basically, Vatsala just saying the class feels like it was just for her, and it really resonated with her. Especially, devotees shouldn't be fearful. Yes, like that.
Nice. Yeah, it was funny, because yesterday I was meditating. What am I going to say? What am I going to say in Jamastami? And usually, I was thinking I should tell some, you know, pastimes and things. And I don't know, somehow it just, this point of difficulties came into my mind, and I was thinking, come on, you're going to talk about difficulties and problems that devotees have on Jamashtami, you know, be more like Leela and stuff. But I mean, it is Krishna's Leela. But somehow Krishna wanted me to talk about this, because I was like, oh, come on, you're going to talk about that. And then it just, it didn't go out of my mind, you know? So there was a reason that I was meditating in that particular way, and now I know why it was. It's so funny.
Anyway, we should probably close out here.
But it just shows that Krishna knows what's going on. You know, nothing happens without Krishna's plan. So Krishna knew that was going to happen to you this morning, and therefore he inspired me to speak on this topic, which was directly to the point of what you experienced immediately before the class. So it just shows again that Krishna's in control, and everything that Krishna does is perfect. So Jai, I wish you all a very happy Jamashtami. Have a wonderful day of service and chanting, and just try to be with Krishna today. And without any material motivations. You don't want anything from Krishna. You just want to be with Krishna and serve Krishna with love, because Krishna is wonderful. And I hope you all can realize that more and more today and for the rest of your lives increasingly. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Have a happy Janmashtami.